It's all going to zero against Bitcoin.
It's going up forever, Warren.
You're against Bitcoin, you're against freedom.
Welcome to another episode of Simply Bitcoin Live. We're your number one source for the peaceful Bitcoin revolution, breaking news, culture, medic warfare. We will be your guide through the separation of money and state. Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen, Michael Saylor announced another massive purchase using his so-called infinite money glitch, where literally he takes debt, buys Bitcoin with it, the price of his stock goes up, takes out more debt, buys more Bitcoin with it, and it's like this infinite loop. Well, he used that infinite loop strategy to finally accumulate 1% of the total Bitcoin supply. That is absolutely crazy. So he currently holds 213,000 Bitcoin, if my memory serves me correctly. And again, it's interesting how, you know, the BlackRock ETF and the MicroStrategy, it's almost as if they're competing a little bit, maybe. Maybe I'm just seeing things. Maybe I just, because I read the news every single day, you see things that are not there. But anyways, I would like to believe that. Who doesn't want to compete to have the most Bitcoin, right? I guess that's what I would do if I was in Michael Saylor's shoes. Anyways, in other news, there's a kind of a historic case right now currently in the Supreme Court. I don't hear a lot of people talking about it, but it's Murthy versus Missouri. And essentially, the implications of this court are really going to determine what the federal government's role is in being able to tap social media companies to censor content or not. And we like to cover any type of freedom of speech related issue on Simply Bitcoin. And the reason, if you guys are new to the channel, the reason that we'd like to cover this on a Bitcoin channel is because in the future, there's going to be two options. There's going to be Bitcoin, there's going to be central bank digital currencies, right? In Europe, they're moving full steam ahead. In the US, they're obfuscating a little bit, but we showed you guys the information being leaked by Tom Emmer, the GOP majority whip, where, you know, he literally showed a picture. We showed it on yesterday's episode, where it said at the very bottom of that picture, it said, you know, the one of the Fed's priorities is a central bank digital currency. So make no mistake, whatever they're telling you, why would they put that, you know, as one of their priorities if they weren't actively pursuing it? Not to mention all the lawfare by the anti-Bitcoin, you know, senators and congressmen and women, right? So anyways, to kind of loop this up, if the government, if the state is not okay with you speaking freely, what makes you think they're going to be okay with you transacting freely? Freedom of speech is the front line for Bitcoin. And something historic happened when Elon acquired Twitter. I know a lot of Bitcoiners are a fan of Noster, and I am too. It's an amazing protocol. You can't just, you know, censor someone. You can't just deplatform them. But the reality is that the vast majority of the world is still on Twitter. Now, the awesome thing about censorship is that there's an awesome part, is that when you censor, people seek solutions, right? So people seek alternatives. So, you know, if, you know, Elon isn't able to keep up what he's trying to keep up, what he's trying to accomplish, and he folds because it is a centralized platform after all, and so much is at stake, you know, that's where protocols like Noster come in. That's like where protocols like Bitcoin come in. But again, in terms of the information narrative trench warfare that we talk about all the time, you know, narrative trench warfare on the battlegrounds of the internet, you know, these types of cases are extremely important. Because again, guys, like, you have to understand what is happening. And we've talked about this many times, but essentially the internet disintermediated things. It started with the disintermediation of information, and now it's the disintermediation of money. And the state, the government, used to have basically control of those two entities, and they're losing it because of the rise of social media, because of the rise of internet usage, and of course, because of the rise of Bitcoin. So of course they're reacting to that. And essentially that's what's going on. But anyways, interesting times. I don't think they call it the fourth turning for no reason, but it should be a great episode. And we got a very special guest. We got
Sina.
How you doing, bro? I think you're muted, my friend.
I'm really not good at this. Happy to be here. Did you find the missing tablets in the Entropia box?
I did. I finally found them. For anyone who doesn't know what this is, Seed Signer, do you mind explaining it like in a 10, 20 second type of explanation.
Right. So the branding is Entropia. It's designed to look like some kind of supplement or prescription drug, but it is one of the most trustless ways to create a private key. So you're selecting one of 2048 seed words, you know, one after the other out of the jar, and you want to mix it up and do it, you know, between each selection. But it's basically a lottery to create a private key in a very secure and independent way.
Yeah, and I've used this before. It's absolutely awesome. You put all the 1024 pieces in a bowl, and you just mix it up, and then you just pick one out of the bowl, and then that's how you choose your words instead of relying on a random number generator or relying like on a hardware device. And you have to trust them. You know, of course, you know, a lot of them have the open source code and all that stuff, but you're still trusting a hardware device versus this. You just put all these words in a bowl, literally mix it up old school. That's how you get your entropy, right? So when I saw this, I bought it because I thought it was so cool and such a clever way of coming up with your 12 to 24 word seed words. Anyways, I want to bring up my legendary co-host. He is smiling today, which means it's going to be a phenomenal show. The one, the only, the Optimus Fields. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing wonderful, man. Okay,
let's check out your shirt. I love that shirt, dude. So it's conservative, no. Progressive, no. Libertarian, no. Bitcoiner, yes. I love that. I approve of this message.
Yes, this is the way. This is the signal here, guys. We say it all the time. It's not left versus right. It's orange versus green. And, you know, Bitcoiners really do feel like a constituent with no political party because we're just like completely outside of the Overton window of both sides of the aisle. And we really are ushering in a whole new paradigm of thinking as far as I'm concerned.
100%. Politically homeless.
Politically homeless, exactly, exactly. Anyways, on the culture, as you guys can tell, we got Seed Signer today. One of the coolest hardware wallets out there. And we're going to talk about where Seed Signer fits and maybe your stack or just the general stack of hardware wallets today. And I'm super hyped to get you on. Our buddy Wine, who helps us on the back end, he's a huge fan of Seed Signer. He loves what you guys are doing. It's really one of the cooler projects in Bitcoin.
Oh, we got an interesting comment. It seems like my restream is acting up, Opti, but could you pull it up? It's by UTXO. Yeah, there we go. So I think what UTXO is referring to is the Entropia. It says, for maximum entropy, you should draw only one tablet at a time, return it, and mix it again before you draw the next one. I agree, because they're double-sided. Remember, they're double-sided. So anyways, that's a really good comment. Seems like someone has used it before. Anyways, guys, before we jump into the show, I do want to give a very special shout-out to our lead sponsor. And, of course, I am talking about the one, the only, Bitcoin Well. Bitcoin Well is the best place to build your automatic self-custody Bitcoin stack. What does that mean? Bitcoin Well is the only Bitcoin on-ramp in the United States that is self-custody by default. That's right. You can't buy Bitcoin on Bitcoin Well unless you're going to take self-custody, which incentivizes self-custody, which perfectly aligns with the Simply Bitcoin ethos of the separation of money and state. What are you waiting for? Go check out bitcoinwell.com and help make self-custody the standard in the United States and Canada. Also, they're running a contest, and currently there's about 3 million Satoshis, roughly 3 million Satoshis in the Bitcoin jackpot contest. So how do you enter into this contest? Well, you go to bitcoinwell.com. If you want more info, go to bitcoinwell.com/contest. We've been giving away, or they've been giving away, better said, a load of prizes over the last couple weeks. We've given away a Passport hardware wallet, a Seb Bunny book, seed plates. In fact, last week we gave seed plates away every single day of the week. Which is absolutely awesome. So stay tuned. We'll be giving away more prizes. But guys, enter into this Bitcoin jackpot contest today. Go to bitcoinwell.com/contest. If you're an existing user, go to your dashboard and go to the rewards section. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the numbers. We have a lot to talk about. Let's check it out. Here we go.
The Bitcoin numbers.
Is your Bitcoin in cold storage really secure? Is your seed phrase really secure. Stampseed's do-it-yourself kit has everything you need to hammer your seed words into commercial-grade titanium plates instead of just writing them on paper. Don't store your generational wealth on paper. Paper is prone to water damage, fire damage. You want to put your generational wealth on one of the strongest metals on planet Earth, titanium. Your words are actually stamped into this metal plate with this hammer and these letter stamps. And once your words are in, they aren't going anywhere. No risk of the plate breaking apart and pieces falling everywhere. Titanium stamped seeds will survive nearly triple the heat produced by a house fire. They're also crush-proof, waterproof, non-corrosive, and time-proof. All things that paper is not, allowing you to hodl your Bitcoin with peace of mind for the long haul. Stamp your seed on Stampseed.
Stampseed and seed sign.
All right, guys, you can take advantage of the QR code on your screen right now. It'll take you directly to the Stampseed website where you can use promo code SIMPLY to get 15% off. Remember, store your generational wealth properly. At the time of recording, the Bitcoin price is $24,370. Sats per dollar, 1,554. Block height, 835,387. Blocks to halving, 4,613. Having estimate April 19, 2024. Total Lightning Network capacity, 4,474 Bitcoin. Capacity value, $287 million. Realized monetary inflation, 1.74%. The total market cap of Bitcoin is currently sitting pretty at 1.27 trillion. Bitcoin versus gold market cap, 9.16%. In the grand scheme of things, Bitcoin is still a baby. Anyways, pause the show right now and stack some sats because there is a bit of a dip. But this has happened many times throughout Bitcoin's bull market. Happens multiple times, 20% dips, 30% dips, sometimes even 50% dips, even though we haven't seen that in a while. But you never know what happens on the Bitcoin roller coaster, what's going to happen on the Bitcoin roller coaster. Anyways, so I do want to talk about this. We usually don't talk about these types of subjects, but man, I usually don't watch his show either. Glenn Greenwald. So he was the reporter that broke the news on Edward Snowden. So he led that original piece. I think that was it was originally released by a publication called The Intercept coming out of the UK. But anyways, I was watching him yesterday on Rumble and he was talking about this case. Now, what I found fascinating about this is that I didn't see it anywhere else, especially from the legacy media. Right. And why is it a big deal? So the name of the case is Murthy versus Missouri. And here's some fast facts or facts of the case. The plaintiffs argue that when they say the plaintiffs, it's specifically, I think it's a couple states. The plaintiffs argue that the defendants use public statements and threats of regulatory actions, such as reforming Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, to induce social media platforms to suppress content, thereby violating the plaintiff's First Amendment rights. The states of Missouri and Louisiana also alleged harm due to the infringement of the freedom of free speech rights of their citizens. The U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana granted the plaintiff's motion for a nationwide preliminary injunction prohibiting the federal government from meeting with social media companies or otherwise seeking to influence their content moderation policies. Now, just back up here for a sec, because literally in the First Amendment, in the United States, like literally says Congress shall make no law, essentially abridging speech. But like what changed here? Like why is the federal government meeting with social media companies in the first place and getting them basically convincing them what to take down and what to take down? And again, if you still don't believe me, check out the CNBC article. The headline is FBI and White House likely coerce social media platforms into removing posts, appeals court says, rules. So, and I mean, like, if you just kind of want to break it down for a little bit, and these are the same people that are trying to convince you to use a CBDC, I think that's kind of, you know, it's kind of scary, man. And then I ran into this clip from CNBC. And check it out. It's really interesting what's being said. And for our audio listeners, I really recommend checking out the video episode of this one. Just to take a look at the anchor's face when he said that.
That is life.
Navalny's supporters have alleged that Putin had him killed to thwart an imminent prisoner swap.
It's tough to watch, and you just, I mean...
To listen to it.
It is. But what we were just talking about, we like to feel a lot... We like to feel vastly superior to the propaganda that comes, but I don't feel vastly superior at this point. I don't. Coming up, I did say thank God for Twitter. Thank God for X.
Did you hear what he said? Did you hear, I have to play that again. So.
What we were just talking about, we like to feel a lot, we like to feel vastly superior to the propaganda that comes, but I don't feel vastly superior at this point. I don't. Coming up, I did say thank God thank God for Twitter.
So did you hear what he said? That was the trippiest shit ever. He said, I would like to feel superior than the propaganda that's coming out of Russia. But at this point, I kind of don't. And then he caught himself trying to stop himself from speaking. And then he ended with, thank God for X, right? Which goes back to what I was saying in the beginning of the show, which is Elon freed the bird. Right. And I know a lot of Bitcoiners feel very strongly about this. And I do, too. I have a Nostr account. I post to it every single day. I appreciate you guys sending me sats. It's freaking awesome. But like YouTube, we get this question all the time. Enopti, it's like, why don't you post to other platforms? We do post to other platforms. We post to Twitter and we post to Rumble. But our volume, volume wise, it's easiest to grow on YouTube. That's just because the vast majority of the users are there. So if you're trying to grow a platform, a media, like we are, we're trying to grow a media company, a small media company. You have to go to where the users are, unfortunately. That's just how the game is, right? And that's why what Elon did, buying Bitcoin, firing 80% of the staff, then releasing the Twitter files, which removed any shadow of a doubt that Twitter went out of its way to censor information, censor certain Americans on behalf of the federal government. It's absolutely crazy. And in the background, these people are convincing you that, yeah, you could trust us with the central bank digital currency, and we're not going to turn around and use that against you. Forgive me if I'm skeptical of, their claims. And I don't blame them, because the incentive structure is in place. If you're a state and you have a monopoly on violence and you have the power and the influence to manipulate speech for certain political end goals, does it surprise you that they're not going to use that for their own benefit? I think what Bitcoiners have come to the conclusion to is no one should have the power to censor another human being. That's why protocols like Nostr and Bitcoin are so important, because your worst enemy could be using Bitcoin. There's absolutely nothing you could do about it. And I believe the world would be a much better place for that. So as Bitcoin gains, picks up in popularity, as more people adopt Bitcoin all around the world, and as the separation of money and state accelerates, and as the state not only gets desperate as information is being disintermediated, but money is being disintermediated, just keep in mind what's at stake and just keep an eye out, because, these things don't just happen overnight, right? The censorship stuff, the laws, they don't just happen over. They're small little increments. And because they're small, you get used to it and it becomes your new normal. And before you know it, you're starting to justify all these crazy things in your head, right? So just be wary and be attentive and kind of understand what's going on. This is crazy what's going on, and it's also extremely exciting. And look, I've mentioned this book a million times, but if you guys want to have a rough idea of why all this is happening, take a look at the book, The Sovereign Individual. They predicted this thing. They predicted all this like it's been playing out back in the 90s. So anyways, I want to get Seed Signer's thoughts on this and then Opti.
Yeah, the one thing that keeps coming to mind for me is this whole concept of won't be evil versus can't be evil. And the way that the conventional social media networks are set up, we're trusting them not to be evil and not to game the algorithms and not to censor content that they don't agree with or think that that is outside of the Overton window. And that's, as you alluded, why Noster and protocols like it are so important, because on Noster, there's it's much more on the spectrum towards can't be evil versus won't be evil. And so I just think it, in terms of free speech, which you've alluded is so sacred, you know, in our political system, we're losing that. And people just need to be tuned in to the platforms that they use and how they may be manipulated, because the narrative has shifted towards protecting democracy, and we have to protect democracy. And the only way to, ironically, the only way to protect democracy is to impinge on people's rights to speak their minds freely. But what the real narrative, in my opinion, is going on right now with the protect democracy sort of perspective is it's a specific version of the democracy that is really the entrenched political interests in our government and the political class in general. The political class kind of has this sort of rule that once you're in their club, you have to be willing to do or say anything to stay in the club. And I think that that is so true with our political system. I think term limits would fix a ton of this, but it's really a sad state of affairs, and it's a hard place to be right now as the kind of person who's a contrarian and is naturally suspicious of things, because there is so much to be legitimately suspicious of in our world, and especially within the American political system. That's 100%. My thoughts.
No, it's a great take. I 100% agree with you. And yeah, term limits would definitely, you know, fix some of these problems. And I would say like, you know, but we really want to move the envelope. We really want to make change, right? It is an election year. And I just want to remind everybody, you know, the most important vote you can make is taking Bitcoin into self-custody. Vote with your wallet. It will be the most effective. Of course, I think regular voting is important.
I also think
disagree with that, but
I also think civil liability can solve a lot of this, because look at the recent demand from, I think it was the Department of Energy, for the miners to disclose information about their operations. That's just a bureaucrat sitting at a desk who decided, probably pressured by Elizabeth Warren or other members of Congress, decided that, oh, this would be a great idea to make this new rule where all the miners have to justify their existence and tell us everything about their operations. And suddenly the mining community, I think it was the Texas Bitcoin Council or whoever it was that sprung to action and challenged this immediately in court, like suddenly the onus is on them to protect their rights. Now, if you removed the civil liability that bureaucrats don't have when they come up with new laws, if the miners could claim some sort of damages, you know, for a bureaucrat behind a desk coming up with a new rule that suddenly puts them in a very you know, precarious position, if there was some sort of liability attached to that, I think a lot of these people sitting behind desks who are not elected and who have been working in the federal government for years and years and years, I think they would think twice if maybe their house is suddenly on the line, or even their job is some, nobody lost their job over that BS. Like there need to be consequences, and the political class at least has the consequence of not being elected the next time around. But there are so many bureaucrats that we didn't vote for who really have no consequences.
100%. Yeah, some people call it the deep state, but it's really the administrative states right up in your grill these days. Anyways, Opti, what's your take on all this, bro? As not a conservative, as not a progressive, as not a libertarian, but as a Bitcoiner.
Well, you know, I can only really speak for myself, Nico. But yeah, I mean, we're seeing in real time, and I've been saying this for a while, that, you know, we're calling it the political class, the administrative state, what have you, the powers that be, whatever nomenclature you want to use. We're seeing that they are scrambling to control the narratives because they understand that they are losing that narrative. And the more they try to attack free speech and paint it in this like idea of like, oh, we must protect democracy, they are really exposing themselves. And we always talk about here on the show that, you know, Bitcoin is a free speech issue. Last week when we were talking about a free speech issue, someone's like, wait, is this a Bitcoin show? Why are you guys talking about freedom of speech? It goes hand in hand. And the question Nika always says is like, if you see them doing what they're doing for freedom of speech, what makes you think that they're going to let you transact freely? And I think at this point is where we double down on the meme of like, free men don't ask. It's like, we don't need their permission anymore. this is very clearly a First Amendment issue where you have the freedom of speech to say what you want. Of course, if you don't cross the laws and break the laws. And on that note, you don't need their permission to transact within their system. This is why we're all Bitcoiners. This is why we love Bitcoin, is because finally we've eliminated those middlemen. And Nico, did you catch that? I only caught a couple clips, but did you catch Don Lemon and Elon Musk last night?
Oh, we're going to go down that route.
It was horrible. Well, I'm just saying, like, it's just very interesting when they try to control the narrative, how it backfires on them so quickly, is because it's something I've been saying for a while on the show for, I don't know, months now, is that they have lost that control of narrative, and they are no longer to manipulate the popular culture consciousness. And it's just funny how bad they fail publicly about how they, you know, they try to frame things and put things in certain boxes.
They try to get Elon like multiple times.
Yeah. And he's like, dude, I just want freedom of speech. Like,
this is Don. So Don Lemon was a host for CNN. Then he got let go. And now he's an independent journalist. And he sat down with Elon for an interview. We'll play you guys a couple of minutes of it. I highly suggest watching the whole thing. It's highly entertaining. But it's basically talking about this subject, and essentially there's two ways of how this is being looked at. There's, you know, this is free speech. Let's allow people to talk freely, right? Like, you know, this is basically how the founding fathers kind of envisioned the US. And then there's the political class and their allies in the legacy media that, believe that, you know, they are the gatekeepers of information. They've enjoyed that power for a very, very long time. Like I said, the internet kind of disintermediated it. For the first couple of years of the internet, no one really cared. But when the vast majority of the communications started happening in the internet, and they started having what was happening on the internet, what was happening on social media actually started affecting elections, that's really when, you know, the government kind of turned their eye. And of course, the legacy media too, right? Legacy media kind of enjoyed this, you know, this ability to kind of just say whatever they wanted. Now it's kind of like, you could say that, but if I'm getting told something else somewhere else and what I'm getting told is true and what you're telling me is kind of a lie, you kind of start tuning out to, you know, the thing that's telling you a lie. Anyways, so this was, go ahead.
No, I was just a quick thought, and I don't know how to attribute this quote, but in the absence of truth, the only thing that matters is the power to establish the dominant narrative. Boom. And so that's why this battle is so important, because for the longest time, the media, the traditional media, had that power. As you noted, the internet shifted that, and now the government is clawing for that power to continue to be able to establish the dominant narrative, which is control in our society.
100%. I mean, look, Nayib Bukele said it when he wrote that article for Bitcoin Magazine, "Don't Drink the Elite's Kool-Aid." He says their most important weapon is their control on truth, right? So this is really what's happening right now. Anyway,
Nico, before you play this, Seat Signer sparked an idea. Like, fiat is literally money by decree. What does that mean? They need to decree the narrative, and you guys fall into that narrative for this whole thing to work. Hence why the corporate press and the powers that be are in cahoots and trying to control the narrative, is because you need to believe them when they tell you that your money is strong.
Yeah, 100, and yeah, and you see this is a great, that's a great point, Opti, right? You see this when they gaslight you in terms of the inflation stuff, like inflation is coming down, your Thanksgiving is cheaper, right? And again, they can get away with that. If they had total control of the media, they can kind of get away with those lies. But now, like, you have the president of the United States and, you know, some congressmen and women on both political aisles, both political sides, getting community noted, right? And you had the head of the European Central Bank get community noted on Twitter. So I understand. Anyways, what we're talking about, this interview is like a great representation of the two sides clashing, right? Let's check it out. It's 5 minutes long. We won't have time to play the entire thing, but we'll play about a minute or two.
So, Don, you love censorship, is what you're saying.
No, I don't love censorship.
Then why are you asking?
I believe in moderation, but I don't believe in
censorship. Moderation is a propaganda word for censorship.
But don't you think free speech is one thing, right? Or not, you know.
Look, if something's illegal, we're going to take it down. If it's not illegal, then we're putting our thumb on the scale and we're being censors.
You're putting your thumb on the scale for moderating hate speech? I mean, you don't put out child pornography. That's not...
It's illegal.
That some people would say that's considered censorship. I'm just saying, you...
No, I literally... Don, you know, I literally said, if something is legal, okay, we will obviously remove it.
Okay.
But if it is not legal, the laws in this country are put forward by the citizens. We're a democracy. If those laws are put in place by the people, we adhere to those laws.
Okay, and I agree.
We adhere to the laws of others. If you go beyond the law, you're actually going beyond the will of the people.
Okay, agreed with the law. But if you are doing something that promotes hate and violence and ultimately leads to killing, you don't feel you have any responsibility not to do that? When the people who are doing it admittedly are saying...
There's articles all the time that lead to violence and killing. Don't they? Shouldn't they? Like, you're applying a differential standard to...
And that's the whole point, right? That's the whole point, is that they get to control the narrative with the legacy media, because it's only a handful of kind of corporations and institutions, but they don't get that same thing. And I just want to remind you guys of, again, the clip with Joe, right, interacting, like literally catching himself and then saying, like, thank God for X at the end. So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, this isn't only the separation of money and state. You can also make the argument that we're living through the separation of information and the state as well. Really, really interesting times. Anyways, before we move on to the news, I do want to give a shout out to our new merch. And by the way, we appreciate everyone putting this. Really, really helps with the channel, helps us stay independent. We just teamed up with a Bitcoin artist called Opti. How do you say it?
Asanoa.
And we came up with all these different variations. So we have the Peaceful Revolution shirt. We have an orange. We have a gold Bitcoin pill shirt. We have a gold snapback. We have a gold Bitcoin dad hat. And we got ladies merch as well. So if you guys want to help support the show, of course, you know, build your Bitcoin stack first. But it really, really helps us. So go to simplybitcoin.com today. And you can check out the new collection. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the news. We have a lot to talk about today. Let's check it out. Here we go.
The Daily News.
I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Foundation Devices. It's self-custody done right. They built a premium-grade hardware wallet called Passport right here in the US. It's fully open source and verifiable. It's the most intuitive Bitcoin wallet designed with a UX reminiscent of a simple feature phone. So you will know how to navigate it and use it the moment you pick it up. Get your Bitcoin off exchanges and into your own hands in just a few minutes. Experience the peace of mind that comes with taking ownership of your own keys. After a massive sellout during Bitcoin Miami 2023, the Passport is back in stock at foundationdevices.com. Bitcoin only, open source verifiable, completely air-gapped security model, gorgeous design craft, premium grade materials. If you're thinking about getting your Bitcoin off exchanges, this is the one for you. Check out the Passport link in the show notes below to learn more.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I made it incredibly easy for you guys. You could scan the QR code on your screen right now. It'll take you directly to the Foundation Devices website where you can get yourself a Passport hardware wallet. Completely open source. It teams up with the Envoy app and it's pretty seamless. Highly, highly recommend. All right, ladies and gentlemen, lots to talk about today. But quick ETF update, which will lead me to my second point, which is, it's interesting. Opti, I mean, I'm going to say, like, maybe I'm seeing things, but I feel like Saylor is trying to keep up with BlackRock, man. They've been going back to back. Like, maybe I'm seeing things that are not there. But of course, little ETF update. BlackRock currently holds 237,000 Bitcoin, Fidelity with 134,000. And of course, MicroStrategy, you know, it's right there, neck and neck. You know, they've been kind of, you know, been close to each other. And of course, Michael Saylor has found the infinite money glitch. And that's what has allowed him to continue to stack more Bitcoin. I'll explain to you how it works in a second. But this was his announcement earlier on today. MicroStrategy has acquired an additional 9,245 Bitcoin for $623 million, using proceeds from convertible notes and excess cash for $67,000 per coin. As of March 18, 2024, MicroStrategy holds 214,000 Bitcoin acquired for $7.53 billion at an average price of $35,160. So Michael Saylor is completely in the green. He's riding high right now. And now he owns more than 1%, a little bit more than 1% of the total Bitcoin supply, man. So yeah, Saylor's going hard. And remember, if another massive company, another massive public company wanted to follow the Saylor footsteps, they could, but they're going to have to pay a lot more for that Bitcoin. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not selling my Bitcoin to anyone, right? What are you going to sell it for dollars? Like that's a trash trade, right? That's like short-term thinking. You got to think long-term. There's nothing to sell your Bitcoin to. Like you sell stuff for Bitcoin and you stay in Bitcoin, right? Of course, you got to pay for your necessities. If you need a house, if you need food, all that stuff, right? You want to live your life, but you know, Bitcoin is savings. You want to, you know, keep your wealth in Bitcoin. And that leads me to my final point, which is only about, I think it's like roughly 2 million or a little bit less than 2 million Bitcoin are actively being traded on exchanges, right? The vast majority of Bitcoin is in cold storage. It has not moved, right? So even if another big player wanted to follow MicroStrategy's footsteps, there literally isn't enough Bitcoin to go around, not to mention the halving is right around the corner, and that's going to inevitably lead to a supply shock, right? So, you know, the demand, let's say the demand stays the same. I would say the demand is increasing by the day, but let's say the demand stayed the same. The natural sell pressure would be coming from the miners that would be having to sell a little bit of their positions in order to cover their expenses, right? But that is naturally going to be cut in half during the halving. So that sell pressure is going to get cut in half. And what does that cause? That causes, you know, the boom, right? So I think that's what we're all waiting for. But this halving's a little bit different. And the reason it's a little bit different is because never in Bitcoin's history has Bitcoin reached all-time highs before the halving. So we're in a little bit of uncharted territory. And that kind of goes back to this previous cycle as well. So never has Bitcoin reached all-time highs before the halving. And never has Bitcoin dipped before the all-time highs in the last bottom, right? So it's never, that's really the, I completely explained that wrong, but how do I explain this?
Never Bitcoin, dip below previous all-time highs.
Of the last cycle. Yeah, okay, a lot of words. So uncharted territory. Shout out to the Chad Saylor, 1% of the total Bitcoin supply. I feel like that was a personal goal for him. Is he going to go for that 2%? Is he going to be able to get that 2%? I don't know, man. I don't know. But anything could happen in Bitcoin world. Anyways, Seed Signer, what are your thoughts on all this, man?
So I am most curious right now about GBTC. And I don't know all the details, the Genesis bankruptcy and some of the forced selling that may be occurring, because I think that's the biggest drag in the market right now. I have to assume that some of the shares in GBTC that are being sold off or being purchased, and maybe the BlackRock or some of the other ETFs, you know, because they have lower fees. But I don't know if it was back in 2015, 2016, there was this meme of the bear whale who just had this huge sell wall on, I forget which exchange it was, but that was like this big drag in the market for a much shorter period of time. And GBTC has so much Bitcoin within their fund, it's still significant sell pressure. I think they still have about $10 billion worth of Bitcoin more than BlackRock does in their ETF product. And I'm just eager to see, because you were talking about sell pressure associated with miners and that they're naturally forced sellers. Right now, there's so much sell pressure seemingly coming from GBTC that I'm curious to see how long that goes on and how low that can go.
Yeah, no, and that's a really good point. You know, there's only sell pressure until they run out of Bitcoin, right, to sell. So, and you know, yeah. It's awesome. It's we know it. And kind of add to your point, I do want to share the screen a little bit because that's exactly what we're seeing. Optic, could you screen, please? Thank you, sir. Here's the grayscale, and there's like a little line. Oh, it doesn't show here. Yeah, it does. So, you know, as you know, Seed Signer was just explaining, it just fell off a cliff, man, their position. And mind you, this is tens of thousands of Bitcoin, right, that they're just dumping, right? Now, of course, you can make the argument that that BlackRock and Fidelity are, you know, buying it up, but that's a tremendous amount of sell pressure regardless. So anyways, interesting. Shout out to Saylor, I guess. I mean, I see a lot of Bitcoiners that were upset. I don't know about you guys, but I'm a free market magnet. Maxi, bro. So, you know, I think Saylor could do what he wants to do. And yeah, anyways, Opti, what's your take on this, bro? Is Saylor buying all the Bitcoin?
Dude, he's buying all the Bitcoin. Well, you know, Saylor knows what we know, man. This is a game of hungry hippo. The name of the game is accumulation. What did he just say on that interview the other day where he was like, we call them poor? He's all like,
you gotta sell it for fiat eventually. Yeah, and then, no, but and the, he's like, the let other me say thing. It another way. We call no, those people yeah. poor.
Yeah, and but the other thing, he was kind of channeling his inner Kaiser there where he was like he who has the most Bitcoin win. And like, it's amazing that Wall Street hasn't woken up to this idea that the only money and the only thing you should be accumulating at this point is Bitcoin. Everything else is a fugazi. It's all fake. It's all manipulated. It's literally all paper gains. And the only people that are really playing the game, as I would say, in the smart way, is Bitcoiners. That we're playing hungry hippo. It's like we want to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. And then to Seedsigner's point, you know, a lot of people in the chat keep saying that, like, oh man, like they're manipulating the price of Bitcoin so much. And like, while I'm not opposed to that idea that the Bitcoin price is being manipulated, I say it all the time. Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. You know, we all know the billionaire playbook here. You FUD Bitcoin, you try to get the price low so you can accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. And then finally, when your bags are packed.
Opti knows that because he dated Chrissy.
Yes, exactly. Once your bags are packed, then you endorse Bitcoin and the price starts to run. So I'm not opposed to that idea. We know this is happening. We know it will happen until it no longer is capable of happening. But the grayscale Bitcoin and the, I don't know, the merry-go-round that we're seeing from outflows of grayscale into the inflows of all these other ETFs is really interesting because they have so much Bitcoin that's most likely why the price isn't moving up as much as we'd like to, even though, you know, all your models are broken. And then back to Saylor. I mean,
they're destroyed.
Yeah, back to Saylor. You know, we're saying he just got to 1% of the total Bitcoin supply, but let's be honest, it's already more than 1% considering there's so many lost Bitcoin out there. So I don't think anyone else is going to be able to touch Saylor's company's portfolio or balance sheet. And, you know, BlackRock is hoovering up so much Bitcoin. Fidelity, they're taking so much Bitcoin off the market. It's just going to be absolutely amazing once they're no longer able to keep the price down and how far this is going to actually run. And like I said yesterday, shout out to Brian DeMint for quoting me. You know, boomers are loving Bitcoin. Wall Street's loving Bitcoin right now. They want as much Bitcoin as possible, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, man. This is pretty crazy stuff. Anyways, guys, buckle up. Take your Bitcoin into self-custody. The bull market is just getting started. It is going to blow your mind these next 2 years or so. It's going to be absolutely bonkers. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the culture to talk about Seedsigner. We have a lot to talk about today. Let's check it out. Here we go.
The Daily Culture.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Cabimrex. They're the most trusted place to buy, sell, and host mining equipment. This is where I personally buy my Bitcoin mining ASICs. Check out their racks today by scanning the QR code on your screen or check the link in the video description. That will take you directly to their Telegram marketplace where you can connect with the member of their sales team. They make purchasing their products easy and transparent. What about selling? They got your back also. Access their vast network of domestic and international customers when you sell your mining equipment with Kaboomrax. What are you waiting for? Check out Kaboomrax today. Kaboomrax. All right, Opti. It's all you, dude. I mean, dude, I love that name. We got that sponsor because we just kept saying Kaboomrax at that mining conference.
Well, Seedsigner rolls off the tongue pretty good. All right. So we got our boy Seedsigner here today, the creator of Seedsigner. I have your website here. We can kind of go through the website a little bit, show what you guys are building. But I really want to start with what we were talking about before we even started the show of where does Seedsigner fit into the hardware space? I know you guys are kind of like battling for your position out there. There's a lot of people that saying, oh, why would you need a Seedsigner? And I think it's one of the cooler projects out there. So maybe TLDR, what Seedsigner is, and then transition into like what you think the place for Seedsigner is in the hardware markets.
Mm-hmm. So Seedsigner is a Bitcoin cold storage tool. We call it a signing device because it's not engineered to persistently store your private key. That's the user's responsibility with our model. But it's a Sign a Device, a cold storage tool that you can build from off the shelf, generic computer parts that can be bought from a variety of sources. So there's no sort of indications that you're specifically buying or building a Bitcoin tool. It's something you can build and use in the privacy of your own home. And the way I kind of think about it in some ways is Seed Signer is a little bit of a victim of our own success because it's a DIY storage tool. A lot of people have heard of Seed Signer, but they don't really understand what it does or how it works or what would be the value in having one. But the reason people continue to talk about it is because it's so darn good. Like our contributors, our volunteer software developers, and all the other people that help with the project have all collaborated to build this amazing tool that for a lot of people, once they get the experience of using one, not say they never use another hardware wallet again, but they understand the value that it has and the usefulness that it provides for people with cold storage. So that's kind of my main goal right now, is helping to convey the value proposition of this do-it-yourself storage tool. Because with Bitcoin, we have, what do we have? Trustless, permissionless, open source money. And it's a little bit of a cognitive disconnect for people that if you want to use this trustless, freedom-oriented open source money, you have to buy a proprietary hardware tool from a company that makes Bitcoin things. And there's a lot of trust that people tend to give up during the process of acquiring and using that tool. And so Seed Signer may not be for everybody, but for people who are willing to learn a few things and put in a little extra effort, it's a tool that you can use that it is a bit more trustless, I would say, in terms of doing that cold storage thing. And it's also a great tool in the context of multi-sig cold storage. That's been our kind of bread and butter from the beginning of the project. And in a mix of other hardware wallets with a Seed Signer, that's also a great way. But another powerful way to think about it for me is that Seed Signer is a gateway drug to Bitcoin multi-sig cold storage. If you're in a single sig setup and you're curious about multi-sig and whether or not you can be comfortable with it and comfortable over time using a multi-sig wallet for your long-term Bitcoin storage, Seed Signer is the place to get started because it takes the marginal cost of getting into a 2 of 3 or a 3 of 5 multi-sig setup way down, because you don't have to buy those multiple hardware devices to even just set up a multi-sig to figure out if it's going to work for your situation. Because our device is engineered not to persistently store private keys, you can use that one cold storage device to set up multiple wallets or to set up multiple co-signers within a multi-sig wallet setup. So it that's what I like to say. It's the gateway drug to cold storage with multi-sig.
Love it. Look, and one of the things also that I gotta say, man, is that we're kind of entering this era where I think the next step for states, and I love that we talked about speech in the beginning of the show, you know, just how they're trying to censor speech, I think that the low-hanging fruit is for them to demonize self-custody, and I bet you they hope they can just make self-custody illegal outright.
Then there's a few ways they can approach that. A lot of people think about it in terms of an outright ban on cold storage devices. But, you know, could there be some sort of information gathering process that is required by the hardware wallet companies? When you purchase a wallet, maybe when you're at home setting it up, there's some sort of personally identifiable information that you have to provide as you're setting up the hardware wallet. Or there's a version of it, you know, to take self-custody in portions of the EU. I'm not totally down on the regulations, but in some countries, you have to provide proof of ownership of a private key to be able to withdraw funds from the exchange. And what this is an attestation that you're not withdrawing to someone else's custody, that if you're taking personal custody of an asset, you have control over that asset as opposed to, you know, using it to be able to move funds to somebody else in some other part of the world. So there's a few different ways that restrictions on cold storage can manifest themselves, but the outright hardware wallet is one of those ways. And it's something that we see either explicitly or implicitly. in different parts of the world. I regularly talk with people from parts of the Middle East, parts of Asia, where it's already hard to find a Bitcoin hardware wallet. And the primary way that they can get their hands on one of those tools is through a black market source. And who wants to purchase, you know, a security critical tool for your personal savings from, you know, a kind of sketch source? So I think I veered off of
not at all,
the
dude.
Trail in the commentary there, but there are a lot of ways that this ban on self-custody could manifest itself.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, because, you know, that kind of record keeping, or, you know, like, they're not doing this now, but, you know, imagine going through an airport. Imagine, you know, you ordering a certain type of hardware wallet through the mail. Again, it's not happening now, but, you know, you kind of maybe in the future, whatever. So if you currently have a hardware wallet, okay, you're good. But let's say you want to order a new one. And then because you're ordering a new one, you're put on a list or something like that. You know, that's where the kind of the seed signer comes into play, where you could just buy these parts on Amazon and just like build it. And, you know, the device is stateless, so it doesn't have any memory. It doesn't store your seed when you shut it down.
Right.
And
we could say this isn't happening in the United States right now. But I, as a little side hustle, seed signer is a DIY project. The best way to get one is to build it yourself. But if you're willing to trade off a little bit of trust, I build them and sell them to people directly. And there's, like I said, some trade-offs involved with that. But I have been asked to ship seed signers to China before. And the explicit instructions I've gotten multiple times from people that, you know, I've worked with are, do not write anything about seed signer, or especially Bitcoin, anywhere on the customs declaration that has to be filled out for me to get, you know, a package out of the country. And even on the inside of the package, don't write anything about seed signer. Don't put a sticker or any of the graphics in there. And especially don't write anything about Bitcoin inside of there, because packages are being opened in certain parts of the world. And for us in the United States, we're very blessed that we can just log into a website or walk into a store and acquire one of these tools. But it's not the case for people in very specific parts of the world at this time. But it is a real phenomenon.
Yeah, it's really interesting, man. And you know, your project is open source, right? Anyone could contribute to it. Walk us a little bit about the building process. Like, how technical do you need to be to build one of these?
It's understandably something that's a little intimidating for some people, but it's really just three primary components that you need to acquire to build a seed signer. The heart and soul of the device is a Raspberry Pi single board computer. We kind of use Raspberry Pi because they're the most ubiquitous, highly available single board computer platform in the world. And they have various form factors, but the one that we prefer is the Raspberry Pi Zero, which is a smaller version that's more easily handheld. There's a very specific version of that Raspberry Pi Zero that comes from the factory without Wi-Fi, without Bluetooth or other wireless functionality. And that's an important part of the value proposition of seed signer. But so there's this Raspberry Pi Zero. As you can see below it in the image there, there's a screen and buttons that we add to the top of it. And then there's a camera. And what the camera and the screen do is basically it facilitates allowing the device to communicate with the outside world, but only being able to do so in a very controlled way. So you essentially buy your Raspberry Pi. You can see there are GPIO pins, which are those metal pins that stick up outside of the Raspberry Pi. You put the screen with the controls, looks like a little video game system on top of that. You just settle it down onto the pins. You attach the camera via a ribbon cable, and then you need a memory card with some software on it. You can either build yourself or download from our GitHub repo. And that's it. You have a seed signer. Now we have some 3D printed enclosures. The designs for those are all open source. So if you have access to a 3D printer, or there's someone in your local community who can print things, it's really easy to print those. Those are the basic ingredients that make up a seed signer. So anybody who can get access to these parts has the ability. Thanks for showing that one up there. Anybody who has access to these parts can build one and have it's not that people don't have access to saving with Bitcoin. It's being able to do it in a more secure way. We can all have a hot wallet on our phone that we may use, and you could even delete it from your phone and then, you know, recreate that wallet when you want to when you want to spend Bitcoin. But the whole point is, with cold storage, the private keys never touch a computer that has a connection to the internet. And that's what a seed signer is. Is it's this, you know, very small handheld computer that has no way of talking with the outside world that involves Wi-Fi or a Bluetooth connection or any sort of other wireless connection like that. And it's a very secure environment where you can create private keys. You can create the public version of private keys that you then need to set up a wallet to be able to receive and send Bitcoin. And then, of course, what would be the point of it if you couldn't create transactions, sign transactions, and spend the Bitcoin? So it's a very secure way to kind of do those three things that all involve interacting with your private keys.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Love it. I got one question. Seed Signer, we've been talking about product market fit here.
You
so
didn't
like
say it right, Opti.
What'd I say?
You said Seed Signer.
What'd I say? Anyways, you're distracting me. Oh, okay. You're distracting me. Okay. So who in your opinion is the ideal user of a seed signer?
I think the profile for the ideal user of a seed signer is a little bit broader than most people would sort of intuitively think. It seems like a high bar to be able to build one of these devices yourself, or a lot of people don't buy the device pre-assembled, buy a kit. And the kit comes with instructions, whether you buy it from, you know, I have an online store, but there are other people in Europe and South America that sell these too, parts of Africa. Buy the kit, look at the components, make sure they match up with what you see online so that there's nothing strange going on. And the most important part is download the software yourself. But this process of snapping together a few electronic components, downloading some software and putting it on a memory card, it's something, you know, with one of Ben Sessions' tutorials or some of the other people that do tutorials, it's something that's well within the reach of most people. And once you have the device and you use it, it's going to teach you more about using Bitcoin at its lowest levels. Your question kind of reminds me of a tweet that I saw just earlier today where somebody was saying, I've never lost any Bitcoin. I've never lost a UTXO. I have a hardware wallet, but every time I plug it in and I enter my PIN code, I have this sort of anxiety that I experience about what if, you know, the hardware wallet's bricked, or what if for whatever reason I can't access my Bitcoin, or it doesn't seem to be syncing with my wallet. What Seed Signer teaches you is the process of starting with a private key, which is everything that your personal wallet is derived from is that private key. Starting with that private key, setting up a wallet from scratch, and then being able to use that private key to authorize transactions with your wallet. Seed Signer, in a very intuitive way, we have amazing contributors that with this tiny little 240 pixel by 240 pixel screen have packed in so much richness of information and workflows that they take working with these fundamental building blocks of Bitcoin, private keys, public keys, partially signed transactions. It takes working with those basic building blocks and makes it a surprisingly intuitive experience for people. So all I can do is kind of try to nudge people in the right direction and make it as easy as possible for them to get one of our devices into their hands. But once they do, I have people that tell me to get back to your original question, you know, Bitcoiners who have wives or husbands that are less technical than them, and they'll put a seed signer in their hands and introduce them to the process of setting up and using a wallet created with a seed signer. And they will tell me that they succeed with seed signer where it seems like other devices are less intuitive and more difficult for their spouse or people they care about for them to understand. Because we don't try to obscure all of the complexity away. We try to take these concepts and put them together in a workflow that makes sense even to people that are less technical.
Love it. Love it. Okay. One last question for me. Well, actually, I got a few, but I know we're running late on time. But I see you're wearing the Bitcoin Akazi shirt. So is there any cool projects that Seed Signer has been a part of? Like, I don't know, give the people some hope in all the stuff you guys have been working on. I know you guys have been sending them out everywhere and seeing cool projects pop up using the Seed Signer. And
when do I get one?
I can't keep tabs of everything, but you guys are doing some cool stuff.
Do you mean the Seed Signer or the Bitcoin Akazi shirt?
Well, just like who's using the
Seed
Signer?
No, I was.
Oh, Nico.
So first, like a shout out to Herman. I've had the pleasure of meeting him once or twice, and he is an amazing Bitcoiner doing, you know, such exciting things in South Africa, where he, I believe he's located in South Africa. I haven't been fortunate to visit them out there yet. But what we try to do with Seed Signer is not gift these devices to people. It's in line with the whole philosophy of, instead of giving a man a fish, teach a man to fish. So there's an example of this is there's a guy called Ronnie Avenado, who is an awesome Bitcoiner in El Salvador. And he's done some work with Me Premier Bitcoin. I got to meet him at the 2022 Adopting Bitcoin conference in El Salvador. And great guy. And his latest project is he is opening what is called the Bitcoin hardware store. I believe I'm getting that right, in El Zante. So it's a brick and mortar storefront in El Zante where you can acquire, you know, all sorts of different kind of things, hardware devices that are Bitcoin related. He has, you know, hardware wallets from different wallet companies. And as far as I know, he has other tools there too. But anyhow, he got in touch with me. He's like, I said, I have this side hustle where I try to put Seed Signers in people's hands with as little friction as possible and guide them into how to use the device and how to show them how it can add value to their Bitcoin cold storage posture. And he was soliciting people to basically place their products in his store. And I wasn't sure he would be open to it, but I pitched him on, what if instead of just sending you hardware that you can turn around and sell to people in your store, what if I show you where you can buy the basic components to build Seed Signers? You know, make sure you have access to the 3D printable models. And if you have questions or whatever, like, be in touch with me. But what if I teach you how to build Seed Signers, and instead of you taking a cut of something that I'm selling you, what if you build them yourself, and whatever profit margin you have, you keep that to, you know, keep growing your store. And obviously you have to live your life and have living expenses. So that's one example of how I am trying to create these cottage scale industry opportunities for people in different parts of the world, where it's not just me sending out hardware. It's people, you know, introducing Seed Signer to their local community and just organically finding, you know, a way that it fits with the Bitcoiners in the area. And it, maybe it fits better in some areas and maybe it doesn't. The beauty part about me is, like I keep saying, I have this little side hustle, but Seed Signer is just an open source software project. We don't have suppliers. We don't have advertising contracts. We don't have employees. We don't have sponsorships. Seed Signer lives or dies based on Bitcoiners building it, finding it useful, and then, you know, hopefully if they're incentivized to do so, sharing it with other Bitcoiners by telling them about their experience or how to build one, or, you know, trying to put Seed Signers in other people's hands. And so I'm not in a position to try to, you know, if the project goes away, I still have my stack. I'm still a Bitcoiner. I still have my family. I'll be just fine. So this project lives and dies on its own merits. And so far, you know, we're just slowly growing organically in the Bitcoin ecosystem. It's, if you've heard of a Seed Signer, that's a testament to other people having a positive experience with it and kind of wanting to share it with Bitcoiners at their local meetup, or Bitcoiners at conferences, or Bitcoiners in their circular economy, different parts of the world. And that's that sort of organic growth that is, you know, slowly continues. That's something that myself and all of our great contributors are really proud of, because we feel like we're trying to approach and grow this thing in the spirit of Bitcoin and in the spirit of open source itself.
Oh yeah.
Love it.
Awesome, dude. All right, ladies.
Wait. Can I ask one more quick question on air? I remember like a year ago, it was getting hard to, maybe it was 2 years ago now, I forget the time, you know, Bitcoin time, it's all a blur. It was getting hard to get the Raspberry Pi Zeros, and they were getting more expensive. Has that been worked out? What's going on with the Raspberry Pi Zeros?
So Raspberry Pi, just briefly to give the backstory of them, they apparently switched suppliers at the exact wrong time during the COVID crisis and some of the supply chain knock-on effects of that. So it's taken them a little bit of time to recover. But as of the last, I would say, 9 to 12 months, it's easy to get a Raspberry Pi again. There, awesome. There are people buying them from El Salvador, buying them from Africa, you know, and finding them through local dealers. So there's one website I will throw out called rpilocator.com. That has a worldwide list of distributors that have inventory, and it's a quick and easy way to find a Raspberry Pi.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. Okay. Last one. Sorry, Nico. I know you're trying to wrap this up, but what do you guys have on the roadmap for SeedSigner? What can the people look out for?
I don't want to say we've plateaued, but our feature set is really strong right now, and the amount of polish in the UI is really good. So SeedSigner is not by any means a completed tool, but we're comprised of developers and FOSS contributors that are kind of scratching their own itch. And we tend to move forward in these sort of development productivity spurts, where generally like several of our contributors will start to have itches that they want to scratch and refinements that they want to make to the platform. So we had a big release last fall that was sort of a feature. Again, I won't say plateau, but we achieved a point with our features that a lot of our contributors are really happy with. And so we are at this point, probably moving into quarter two of 2024, moving into one of those stages where I see some of our contributors, particularly Keith Mackay, who is on a 6-month grant from the Human Rights Foundation. Shout out to them. Huge appreciation for that. But Keith is scratching some itches and building some optimizations into our software. There's also recently been a push to add multiple languages to the UI, which adds a layer of complexity, but I think there's definitely a cost benefit with that in terms of getting people seed signers that they can use in their own native language. So we're kind of in this ramping up period in our development cycle. So I just encourage people to keep an eye on, you know, the website, keep an eye on my Twitter profile, as well as that of some of our contributors. And just it's a great tool where it stands, and we're incrementally making it better. So just keep an eye out for what we're working on next.
Oh yeah. Love it. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on the show. Guys, check out seedsigner.com for more info. If you guys enjoyed the show, you know what to do. Smash the like button. Really, really helps with the algo. So if you're watching us on YouTube, Rumble, or X, formerly known as Twitter, just smash the like button. Really, really helps us. I'm your host, Nico. This is my legendary co-host, Optimus Fields. And our guest today is SeedSigner. You can go follow him on Twitter for more information at SeedSigner. Anyways, man, really, really appreciate you joining us on the show today.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was the show. Hope everyone had a good time today. We're almost halfway through the week, man. So things are flying by in Bitcoin time. We did have a little bit of a dip today, 63,000. That creates a great opportunity to stack that dip. We're already recovered at 65,500. But you know what we advocate for on Simply Bitcoin, just DCA, stay humble, stack sats, stay solvent, and that's how you win in Bitcoin. Anyways, love you all. We'll see you guys tomorrow for a brand new episode of Simply Bitcoin Live.
This episode was brought to you by BitcoinWell.com, a Bitcoin-only platform on a mission to enable financial independence.